The good news is that's the extent of the PowerPoint. So, you know, it's like whenever you go and you tell people, well, I'm sorry, I don't have a PowerPoint presentation, they'll go like, oh, you know, death by PowerPoint. But I'm very glad to be here and very glad to be with Dr. Murray and to talk about this issue. And at the end of the session, we're heading to Atlanta, and as you know, tomorrow I think the CDC will be making some pretty significant announcements around prescription drugs, opioid pain relievers, et cetera. I don't think for you all as experts in the field it will come as any surprise, but I think when you have the imprimatur of Dr. Frieden and the CDC talking about this issue in the context of a public health epidemic, by actual definition, it really does, it's really important to help bring that attention to the issue. And that really helps us frame very much the President Obama's strategy through the National Drug Control Strategy. You know, ONDCP has been around since 1988. You know, we've had a variety of directors from a former governor, former Secretary of Education, a former four-star Army general, on and on. So we've had different viewpoints. But I have to tell you, I went out of my way to make sure that I sat down and met with every one of them, including Bob Martinez down in Florida when he was the mayor of Tampa, then on to be governor. And it's amazing whatever discipline or focus or ideas you had about the drug issue, you end up as the five former ONDCP directors will confess or say publicly, looking at it as much more of a public health problem and figuring out how to do it. But I think you also recognize in the past that talking about the drug problem in this country as a public health problem, a public education problem, one that can't be solved by, as we like to say, arresting our way out of the problem, at times that was the third rail in discussing the drug issues. You were soft on drugs, or you were soft on crime, or heaven forbid, you were soft on both. And that actually impeded, I think, being able to think about this in another way. The other thing, I believe you know, I had spent 37 years in law enforcement, so as a police chief, I really recognized how important it is that all of this burden not be placed upon the criminal justice system, which is actually inadequate in many ways to deal with this particular problem. But if you look at it from our upbringing or our culture, what you kind of see is that sheriffs and police chiefs, prosecutors, law enforcement officials are kind of, it's kind of a can-do business. It's one of the few places that's open 24/7. They're pretty easily recognizable by the cars and the uniforms they have. They got a real easy to remember phone number. And oftentimes, elected officials, city councils, mayors, and others will turn to them and say, well, you know, you need to work on this problem. You need to deal with it. Whether it was truancy or whether it involves the drug issue, et cetera. And since you come up in this atmosphere, and I'll just give you a quick story, since you come up in this atmosphere of can-do, so from the day you enter the police academy till the day you get out, a lot of information is thrown at you, but one thing you're taught is about command and control, or to take charge. So when you are 21 or 22 years old and you haven't much experience at all, and you get to some horrific accident scene or some other kind of terrible issue, everybody's kind of looking at you. The secret, of course, is that you probably aren't all that sure about exactly what to do. I hate to break that spell. But you do know how to take charge, and you do know how to take command and control. And so what has really, I think, happened over particularly the last few years is that these law enforcement officials who are kind of being designated, well, do something about the drug problem in these neighborhoods, do something about, et cetera, saying, you know what, we really want to be at the table, but we don't need to be at the head of the table. we really need to be much more supportive of the people that have expertise but that obviously need resources in dealing with this. People that need resources in prevention, people that need resources in treatment programs, and then being, as a police chief or a sheriff or prosecutors, and I hear this all the time, you're also in this area, you really are the unexpected messenger. You're this wonderful individual that everybody expects to have a certain viewpoint. Well, if only you give us more police officers, or if only you give us a larger narcotics unit, or if only you... And they expect that answer, and frankly, for my colleagues around the country, that isn't the answer they are giving at all anymore. They're saying you need to be much more supportive, much more understanding about what we've learned in prevention. You need to be much more supportive and understanding about drug treatment. And then, of course, also very importantly, you really need to be very aware of what recovery is and what relapse is, and the fact that these programs can work, and the fact that these programs can work for actually less of a taxpayer dollar cost than some of the things that we're paying for now. So let me mention a few things. In one of the executive orders that the president has given to all of the senior staff, the cabinet members, is to use science and evidence as the basis for decision making. And we've tried very hard on that to follow that exactly. I think there's some people that clearly will kind of point a finger at us over discussions around marijuana and say it's about ideology, et cetera. But frankly, we don't come to it with an ideological point of view. We issued the president's first national drug control strategy in May of 2010. It really has a much more significant emphasis and much more significant focus on treatment. It also actually has greater numbers attached to that, and it also has goals that we very much hope to achieve. Reducing drug use and the consequences, and we think that particularly with these unbelievably difficult economic times, this is a strategy that makes an awful lot of sense. We think it's a great blueprint. It actually has the authority, as many of you know, it has the authority to tell federal agencies what they should be doing and how they should be spending their money in order to meet the president's goals. And it has that force of authority with the federal agencies. But as all of you all know so well, the work that's being done is oftentimes being done in the local level. And I know, since this isn't being recorded, that I can tell you that all the good ideas in these prevention and treatment programs don't come from within Washington, D.C. I know you're stunned by that revelation. But during the last 2.5 years now, I've had this great opportunity to travel the country. That's where the work's being done. That's where the ideas are coming from. Let me tell you some of the major components of the president's strategy. We built upon that strategy from May of 2010 into the strategy that was just recently released, which is not significantly different, but adds a few additional factors. The impact of drug use and the abuse of prescription medication. We also work very heavily in the area of underage and binge drinking. I don't see how you can have a national drug control strategy and not talk about underage alcohol use also. The substance abuse as it affects academic performance. All of these things, by the way, that I'm going to mention in just a second, I think help to put a different recognition and a different face on America's drug problem. When you talk about not being able to keep kids in school, you know, I'll frame it in another way, too. So shortly after I got the job, I was nominated in March of 2009 and confirmed in May, and I thought, wow, that took 2 months. Let me tell you, 2 months right now looks like you are speeding through the process. So I think it was June that I had this opportunity then to meet with the president and talk about this. And so in June of 2009, we were talking about the drug issue. And two things he said. One, he said, Gil, he said, I have a lot on my plate. That was June of 2009. So I know now that things have really pretty much lightened up for him, and he's just... Okay. And the other thing he asked me, he said, do you really think we can make progress in this? So I kind of summed up in the short period of time that I had with him. I said, if I look at all the issues that you're facing right now and that we're facing as a country, you want to improve education, you want to keep kids in school, and you want to see them graduate. You want a workforce that's viable and energetic and not prone to accidents and on and on. You really want to improve race relations, particularly between the police and minority communities. You look at our southwest border, and now, of course, our northern border also, but you look at all of the issues along the southwest border. And then you look at our international relationships, our relationships with Russia and the heroin issue that exists there, our relationship with Mexico, our Central America and South America relationships. Then you look at healthcare costs and all of the problems, like you know so well and have been told to me in very clear terms, like Dr. Murray expresses. This issue of drug abuse affects everything that you do. It increases healthcare costs. It loads up emergency departments that are already very busy. It loads up clinics, and it impacts every other illness and ailment, I think, that would be involved in these things. So I think of all of these things, I said, Mr. President, put together, and I only have to scratch the surface one layer, maybe two layers, and the drug issue in this country is there. And then when he said, well, do you really think we can make progress? So I naively, back then I was very naive, but I said naively, I said, you know, Mr. President, the wind's at our backs. My exact words. And I said, this terrible economy is forcing a rethinking and a collaboration on this issue that actually I haven't really seen or heard in the past. And I've told in the many, many visits to lots of people on the Hill, they often say, well, what do the law enforcement people think? I'm sure they're for more minimum mandatories and they're for more law enforcement. And I've been very frank with all of the elected officials and said, you know, elected officials, I said, the law enforcement community, prosecutors, police chiefs, sheriffs, heads of state, I said, they're far ahead of you on this issue, and they truly are. They really talk about this in ways that are totally unexpected. They don't talk about making more arrests and trying to lay out in front of the press a table with more drugs on it. Those things are important, and we understand that, and going after drug dealers, traffickers, and on, that's all very important. But reducing our own demand and being more involved in treatment and then getting people back into the community is really the key. Part of this, of course, is around the president's winning the future, and we can't win the future if we don't make some of these changes. The National Survey on Drug Use and Health, you know a lot about the NISDA data itself, shows that illicit drug use among teens has increased between 2008 and 2010. And that's mostly as a result of increased rates of marijuana use. I think we certainly can talk about that, and I'd be happy to discuss both the administration's position on both medical marijuana. The president as a candidate and the president in office has been very clear in his opposition about opposing decriminalization and opposing legalization, but also very clear in saying this needs to be looked at much more in the public health context and not just as a criminal justice issue. Effective drug use prevention, it happens at the local level, and we know so much more about prevention programs that work. We're very proud of the drug-free communities programs that we fund through our partner, SAMHSA. About 740 local grassroots organizations that get a small amount of money, but for a very small amount of money, as people like to say inside the Beltway, they punch above their weight. These are groups of people that have joined together to use evidence and science and information at the grassroots level to give a message that resonates very well with kids. The administration's focus on drug prevention extends to what Dr. Murray also mentioned, the Affordable Care Act. The President signed an executive order creating the National Prevention, Health Promotion, and Public Health Council, charged with providing coordination. I sit on that under the auspices of the Surgeon General, who leads that effort, and of course, again, talking about prevention. Recommendations related to drug prevention parallel those, by the way, that are set forth in the National Drug Control Strategy, that are in the prevention strategy. And so we try to look at these things as building upon each other and being supportive of each other, not as silos. And, you know, I think most people in the audience would admit that, that perhaps we've looked at the drug problem as a silo. You don't really think of the drug treatment area as part of primary health care. You don't think of the responsibility to deal with the drug problem as a portion of primary health care or a responsibility of primary health care. And we'd really like to see that become an ongoing part. Recognizing the health-related signs of drug abuse is a valuable tool. Talking to people that that teach and train within medical schools, the amount of time and attention that they're beginning to devote to this, particularly around the prescription drugs and pain care, around teaching in the medical world about tolerance and addiction and pain management, et cetera, is particularly important. I think the parity requirement that is part of this, many of you know our former deputy director, Tom McClellan, who is, you know, just a paramount researcher in the area and probably has forgotten more about the specifics of our of the drug issues than I will clearly ever know, although I'll give you all these Washington phrases, and if you would jot those down so that when you return back to your local community, you can use them to impress your friends and colleagues. Drinking from the fire hose is another one that we like to use. So when you're getting tons and tons of information, you can do that. If I come up with any other walk, I'll make sure I clue you in on those so you can tell your friends and neighbors. We're big supporters of drug courts, but we're not big supporters of just the fact that these drug courts exist and that they are part of the criminal justice system. But according to the Urban Institute study, which just finished a very comprehensive longitudinal piece on drug courts, they actually work. So they not only work and they're not only effective, they work and they're effective and they're at less cost than some of the other areas. You know, when I go to these cities and I go to drug court graduations, and I've traveled almost every week now for 2.5 years. When I go to these, and then I turn on the television at night, you know, in the hotel room, there'll often be a group of people, and they're just mad as hell. I mean, whatever city I happen to be in, there's just lots of people that are just mad, and they're unhappy about government, and they're unhappy that government doesn't listen, and they are unhappy that taxpayer dollars are being wasted, and on and on. And I thought, you know, if you ever want to see an efficient use and an effective use of taxpayer dollars, go to a drug court graduation. Go and see the commitment of a judge and a prosecutor, a treatment professional, community people and families, and go to a drug court graduation. Honestly, if you aren't moved by that, right, oh, there you go, see. If you aren't moved by a drug court graduation, you got a heart of stone, I'm telling you. You are one tough person. You should have gotten into law enforcement. Maybe I picked the wrong thing. And these things are critical. I mean, the more this unexpected message comes from a person with 37 years in law enforcement, I think the better it is for all of us. You know, I have a lot of statistics, and I think I'm going to kind of pass through some of those statistics. I can tell you that Saturday we did the DEA sponsored the third drug take back with well over 4,000 law enforcement agencies around the country. They're pretty busy already, but they have found now time for this is the third time to actually participate in getting drugs. Could be over the counter, could be prescription drugs, but it really brings to people's attention and awareness the problem of our prescription drug issue. And I would think that they were guessing that they could get close to 400,000 pounds. That really tells you something about what's in our medicine cabinets that's unneeded or expired and could be quite hazardous to those people. all of these things that I mentioned, talking about the prescription drug problem among our active duty military and our veterans, talking about a prepared workforce, you know, they put a different face on the drug problem, and one that isn't always recognized by the evening news, because the evening news always seems to center on arrests, and it always seems to center on inner city issues. The methamphetamine problem is a rural and suburban problem. The prescription drug problem is an older person's problem. No offense to anyone in the audience that could be considered an older person, but it can be more of an older person's problem. It can also, of course, be an entree by very young people through the medicine cabinet. But these things are really critical. These things are really important that we help together. We help to wake up the country to the problem of the drug issue and to recognize it for what it is. But the other interesting thing for me has been, it doesn't matter where I go, who I sit down with, who I have coffee with, what round table that I'm discussing, I have not found anyone who has not been impacted in some way, shape, or form by the drug issue in this country. Themselves, a friend, a son, a daughter, another relative, a neighbor, a coworker, on and on and on. It really, according to the Department of Justice, now costs us about $193 billion a year. That's about $20 billion more than diabetes is costing this country. Now, you would think that that given my background, that I would be led to kind of, you know, after a long time in the business that I was in, I mean, you can become very jaded and very cynical. But quite frankly, I'm very optimistic that in a lot of ways we're going to make a lot of progress. We can deal with this prescription drug problem first by bringing it to the attention of the public, but then by instituting some really, I think, very smart. And so you know that if it was very smart that I was not the author and I was not involved, some very smart people who put together a very smart strategy called the Prescription Drug Strategy that will make a huge difference through education, through proper disposal, through using PDMPs, and lastly through enforcement, particularly around the pill mills. Drugged driving is another issue that has clearly been under the radar of the American public, and we've worked very hard to put drugged driving in front of the American public and figure out how we can deal with that and make our roads safer. And we do all of this through not only partnerships with other federal agencies, we do all of this with partnerships with state and local agencies. And I could not have been more proud than last month to be joined at the hip by the Mothers Against Drug Driving. So here's an organization that has, for 40 years, worked hard in a variety of ways. Now, of course, they're international, but worked hard to reduce this nation's alcohol-impaired driving. And we have made progress. I mean, we have clearly made progress, and we cannot take our eye off the ball. But drug driving is one that hasn't been on the screen, and so we're going to bring it to that attention. We're going to figure out smart ways to work together, particularly with an organization that's held in such high regard as Mothers Against Drunk Driving, to begin to reduce that. So there's a lot of very positive things that are going on. I think the issue of drug use with and marijuana use by young people as a benign drug, and I think that the message they have been getting that it's medicine and that it's being given to patients by caregivers through dispensaries, as they have told me in these focus groups, is not a particularly good message for young people when we talk about this. But I think that by working together, by having a great opportunity to be invited to the president's session, and by thanking her for the recognition for this particular issue, I look forward to engaging, discussing some of these things with you. So thank you, Dr. Murray, and thank all of you.